Ethan Allen Institute presents Common Sense Radio with Bill Sayre.
Our mission is to help people better understand the fundamentals of a free society, individual liberty, private property, and limited government.
Welcome, kindred spirits and listeners of all persuasions, to Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the today by Sandpoint Valley Equipment, Vermont's premier equipment, farm equipment dealership. I'm going to tell you a lot more about Sandpoint Valley during our mid-show break, but I wanted you to know who's making today possible. Agriculture is very important to us today, not just in Vermont, but throughout the world. And for many, many years, decades, and even centuries, American agriculture has been far more productive than agriculture in other parts of the world. That's meant more of our resources could be devoted to other purposes, like science and discovery and all types and kinds of luxuries that we enjoy. But it's also important to remember that part of how that happens is to add value to our agricultural products and all of our natural resource products. That's how we create a prosperous ag economy and a prosperous general economy. But these days, ag is even more important. If you look across the world, I'm looking at the paper here, there's continued bombings and destruction in Ukraine. There's going to be a lot of rebuilding that has to be done there to get their agriculture up and running. Right above that is a headline about retail sales dropping in America, having dropped in November and December. That's not a good sign. And then, of course, we have our high and rising interest rates, which are hard on farmers just as they are on everybody else. But through it all, if we don't have food to eat, nothing else can happen. And so we're going to remember that as we go through today in our visit with Bill Rao. Bill, have we got you on the line?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Mighty good to hear your voice. Well, Bill, it might be good for people to know a little more about your farm. And I visited it one year on the breakfast on the farm, and I was very much impressed. It was clean. The animals seemed happy. The environmental protections were good. We're going to talk about that today. Tell us what we should know, Bill, about your farm, and then we'll work our way into ag issues that affect all farmers.
Sure. I farm with my brother Brian in the town of Sheldon. I live in Highgate, but the farm is on the line between Highgate and Sheldon, so we're up here in Franklin County, not too far from Lake Champlain or the Canadian border. We milk 900 cows, sometimes a little over, but typically, it's 900 cows. We produce about 27 million pounds of milk a year. We always get a quality award for our annual production. We have a digester on our farm, and that went in 2007. We've produced about 1.8 million kilowatts of electricity a year. That's exported to the grid, and we've done that since 2007. And that generated some interest in the farm. Everybody wanted to see that project back when it was all the rage, and people started coming from everywhere. And since then, we've had over 33,000 people from 48 countries tour the farm.
That's testimony. There's a lot to see there. Keep us going, Bill Rao.
Yeah, well, we've had several events where we've hosted an event to show people what agriculture is about and what today's farm is all about. And the common thing that you hear from people after you show them something is, "I didn't know it worked that way." Mm. So it's important to give people a look to see what's going on. They want to know where their food comes from, and fair enough. And So we did that outreach program for, I don't know, 13, 14 years. And when COVID showed up, we kind of shut things down to the public. We had enough challenges without getting in that mess. So anyway, we're still at it, and hopefully the next generation is going to be doing something here before too many more years, and give me a chance to have a little fun.
Although I'm going to figure, Bill, that you have some fun at least some of the time now.
And, I've been known to have a little fun by times, yeah.
Yes, indeed. Our guest today is Bill Rao. He and his brother have a large dairy farm up in Sheldon, Franklin County. And we're learning today about the challenges and opportunities that face Vermont agriculture, with special emphasis on our dairy farmers and how it is that they're improving their productivity and their competitiveness and the quality of their product, while at the same time taking good care of their animals and the environment. That's what we like to do, and that's what Bill Rao and his brother do. So give us a call with your questions or comments, and you can do so at 244-1777. Bill, I'm going to build on that last point you made. When people say, "I didn't know it worked that way," I'm going to figure they have a new appreciation of how hard it is to create a product and then sell it into the marketplace and cover your costs, and at the same time take such good care of the environment and your animals. Tell us a little more.
Well, you're right. Well, let me give you a little history lesson here.
Okay.
In 1970, there were 648,000 dairy farms operating in the United States. By 1988, the number was 216,000. And by 2018, there were 40,000 remaining. Milk production at that point for the United States was 217 billion pounds a year. Better than half of that was produced by 2.9% of those farms. Mm-hmm. Today, our national dairy herd consists of 9.4 million head of high-producing milk cows, and we begin 2023 with 29,000 dairies left in operation. 2022 milk production totaled 226.8 billion pounds, so just shy of 227 billion pounds. 18% of that volume was exported in milk equivalent products at a total of $9.5 billion worth. You know, that would be in cheese, butter, powders, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Ice cream.
And ice cream, yeah. So you're right, Bill. The dairy industry plays an important role in the U.S. economy. It accounts for about 3.5% of gross domestic product, and provides well over 3 million jobs that support people and their families who rely on the dairy industry for a source of income. Mm-hmm. But today, you know, there are a lot of challenges, and the environment is a big challenge. But, you know, I guess if we get back to the consumer for just a minute, mm-hmm. we'll look at it like this. Given the choice, the U.S. consumer will vote with their wallet in favor of domestic foods. They tend to prefer either local or regional products. They demonstrate an expectation of fair pricing for fresh, top-quality products, which are both traceable and accountable. Their preference is to support their neighbors, but first you have to convince them that you've got their confidence. But the way it looks from the farmer's perspective today, in light of the frequency of the natural disasters we witnessed over the years, recent years, seems that national policy should recognize the importance of food being produced regionally across our entire country. But key to the whole thing is our continued success as a nation is our collective response to three topics. First is the need for nutrition. Second is the demand for energy. And third is environmental stewardship. And it would seem that we should remind ourselves before beginning to manage assets or protect resources or becoming overly restrictive. We need to first understand the system still has to work. And that's getting to be quite a burden. It's ever present on all the farms today, whether they have cows or not.
Mm-hmm. So. Is the water quality the chief issue? Limitations on your animal units and how much pollution might be created and how you handle it is a very big issue. Is water quality?
Water quality is an issue, but air quality is also an issue. Mm-hmm. And depending on where you live, I mean, there are regions of the country where there isn't an abundance of water, so that's not as much of an issue in those places, but air quality is. And, you know, this greenhouse gas business is, we thought we had a tool with the digester to address the greenhouse gas issue by utilizing it to make power. And that's worked pretty well for us over the years.
Explain, Bill, how that works, the digester.
Well, the digester is a big vessel, big concrete tank. It holds 850,000 gallons of contents, and it's the manure ferments in the tank, and it changes the volatile fatty acids into feed for the methanogens that produce the methane. And the methane is taken off to fuel a 24-liter engine to turn a generator to produce the power. And like I say, we produce about 1.8 million kilowatt hours of power a year.
That's a lot of power, a lot of energy, Bill. I hear there's a new proposal on the drawing books, or perhaps in the experimental change a stage that would put the methane into the pipelines, as would have to be processed somewhat. This couldn't go directly in, but it's a different approach than producing electricity. What do you think about that?
Well, we've been talking with some people about that, and we're interested in hearing more about it. You still need a digester.
Yep.
Because you're not going to make the gas without the digester. But rather than have an engine, you have a boiler to keep the contents at 101 degrees Fahrenheit, which is the same temperature as a cow's stomach, and it's a 21-day process from the time it goes into the digester until it exits the other end, and you've gotten virtually all of the gas out of the manure.
So it seems to me, Bill, that it's very fair and reasonable to say that that's renewable energy. Would that be?
It is.
Yeah. And sometimes people forget about that. I'll bet there's a lot of people who visit your farm who aren't aware that that's another form of renewable energy. Makes good use of the manure and turns it into gas that can either be used to produce electricity or perhaps cleaned up and put into the pipeline. These are all tremendous innovations that are going on in agriculture right now, and there's more on the drawing books. How much of your time, Bill, does it take to keep the digester running, whether it goes into gas or into electricity? What's the time component for energy and maintenance and repair replacement?
At times it's not too bad, and at times it's excessive. Mm-hmm. I've thought about that question for some time, and because I've been asked that, how much time does it take? And my response is this: it's like having a small boy on the farm, and he may be the best boy in town, but you probably don't want to turn your back for too long because something's going to change.
That's a good one. Not that they mean any harm, but they just don't have the experience that we hope that we will have in due course in future years. So we've got the energy production and we got the milk production. I hope you could review for us again what's changed in the number of dairy farms. Those were frankly quite astounding changes over time. Can you review that again for America?
Oh, the numbers you're saying?
Yeah, the numbers.
Yeah. Well, in 1970, we had 648,000 dairy farms.
Okay.
And back then, those were all tie stall barns. Mm-hmm. And today, we have the larger farms are free stall barns. It's less labor intensive. The cows get to move around as they choose, and the cows are pretty well taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
But by 2016, we'd gone from 648,000 down to 216,000 in 1988. By 2018, we were down to 40,000. And today, we're at about 29,000 in operation across the country.
And, of course, they're producing on average a lot more milk, but it's a reflection of the technology and the innovation so that you can produce good quality milk at the lowest possible price.
Well, the genetics are better. The genetics improve each year. But the nutritionists, the science behind it, we understand more about how to manipulate the animal's gut to produce more milk. And we understand more about how to raise and store the feed so that it's at its optimum for the animal. And there's quite a lot of work that goes into that. But everything has improved to improve the genetics and the diet and the production. So we're doing more with less animals.
And that's what every entrepreneur and every business in Vermont and the nation wants to do and strives to do. And you're doing so in Franklin County with our dairy industry. Do you have figures on the average size of farm today, and also I'm talking about number of dairy animals per farm, and also how much average production of per cow is? Have any of those in mind?
Well, I can tell you this. We try to run a high herd average number of pounds of milk per day per cow, and it's an average because some cows are just coming into lactation and some are getting ready to exit. So the ones that are getting ready to exit are giving very little. The ones coming in are giving a lot. So we look for a herd average of the cows that are being milked. And if you're not up in the 90-something pound range, you're not making it because your competitors are there, and that's what you're going to have to compete against. The things are penciled out against a high herd average. We feed a high starch diet. That's expensive. And milk is subject to change up or down for pricing over a short period of time. We produce a lot of cheese, but if there's an excess of production, we look for an export market, and we have export markets. As you heard earlier, we exported $9.5 billion worth of product last year. So those markets, when they're there, really balance the dairy production against demand. So it's a supply and demand balance. And if you have a balance, the price of milk stays relatively steady. But right now, it looks like the United States has had good production this year. And it looks like that the European Union, which is our chief competitor for export markets, they produce 330 billion pounds of milk a year. But we're one country. They're 31 countries. But they're a big competitor in the marketplace. So they had been down on production because of drought and high heat and drought. But this year it shows that their production is robust and they're gaining, like the Netherlands and Germany and Poland. Those are three big milk producing countries in the European Union. So that's going to have an impact on our export markets. And one of the other things that has a real impact on our export markets is the competition between other countries. If you have another country whose currency isn't valued as strong as the United States currency, guess who gets the bid for the product? And we've lost bids because of our strong currency, which is fine, I guess. But it's quite a game.
It is indeed, and that's what we are on this show, Bill, is an educational mission. And we all enjoy the benefits of Vermont agriculture. We recognize that in the case of milk, the vast majority is shipped to other parts of the nation and the world. We hope as value-added products added value right here in Vermont. But we also are learning the lesson that prices, as Bill just explained, often are determined globally and costs are determined locally. And because of that dilemma, we can suffer the consequences of a high cost increase that affects us more than other parts of the nation or the world. And the result of that is it makes it harder for our dairy farmers to compete, to survive and to thrive. But like all entrepreneurs in a market economy, they're doing their best to bring us the food and the dairy products that we all enjoy while earning a living for themselves. We're coming up on our mid-show break. So, Bill, I'd like you to think for a moment about what question you would like us to take up in the second half of the show that would be helpful to people to understand some of the challenges, most important challenges and opportunities that you face in the dairy industry. And if you have it ready now, that's fine. If you don't, we'll pick it up after the break. And
okay.
What I'm going to emphasize, Bill, is that we tend to take for granted of what doesn't change in our lives, whether it's good or bad. And let's focus on farming and working lands and working forests right now. We take it for granted because it's always been there in recent decades at least, and it's well taken care of, but it faces enormous economic stress. And we sometimes think that we can impose overzealous regulation or overzealous taxation on sectors of the economy, whether it be value-added manufacturing or agriculture or forestry. And it may be a regulation or a policy that makes good sense when we look at its stated intentions, but the intentions are not good enough to ensure good policy. We have to look ahead and see how this policy would affect our farmers and their ability to earn a living. And most of all, we should appreciate all that the farmers do to make our life better. So stay tuned. We'll be back with Bill Rao.
This is my right, a right given by God, to live a free life, to live in freedom, talking about
Welcome back to Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute, and today brought to you by Champlain Valley Equipment, Vermont's premier farm equipment dealership. But they don't offer service and sales on just farm equipment products. They also have light construction, and they have outdoor recreation vehicles. They have the whole full line of steel equipment for chainsaws, which everybody who works in the forest appreciates those. They're just an outstanding company. And they have locations throughout our listening area, in St. Albans, up near where Bill Rao is, over in Derby, which is where Bobby Starr lives, down in East Berlin, or what, Berlin, near the station. And then, of course, in Middlebury, the flagship station, the flagship store. And that's where you'll find Brian Carpenter and Andrea Warren. And then their new location in Essex, where they specialize in the equipment that had previously been I don't know if they offer the full line of equipment, but they offer the equipment that is used in agriculture and light construction. And I'll remember the name in a moment. But many of you know that sometimes I forget a little bit, and I appreciate your forbearance and tolerance. We all try to be tolerant. What many people don't know about the operation, the Champlain Valley Equipment, is that they have about a dozen service vehicles on the road. What does that mean? Why is that important? Well, it means if you're working on a machine in the field or in the shop, you don't have to go into town to get the part. You can get it from one of the service vehicles, and that saves you time. What Bill Rao has helped us understand today, that when you save time, you save money, and it makes you more competitive. And if we're not competitive, we lose our producers, and I don't think anybody wants that. Also, they have a full line of equipment that has been previously owned, and many people are not aware that Champlain Valley Equipment also provides servicing of these vehicles or this equipment, and they have very good and experienced, trustworthy vehicle service people. They know what they're doing. They do a good job. They do it efficiently, and you should give them a try. There's so much more I could say about Champlain Valley Equipment. They're just a great company. They're an asset for Vermont, particularly our agriculture. And I trust them. I respect them. They're reliable. They're honorable. They have integrity. And I hope you will trust them, too. We're going to go back now to Brian or Bill Rao. But as we do so, I do want to thank Kevin Ellis for another good set of interviews before ours. I just got to hear a little bit of the last one. So I don't know the details, but as always, it's a good interview. And then after our show, I hope you don't want to miss the Midday News Service with Lee Cattell, Brady Farkas, and Roger Hill all the latest news, sports, and weather that's important to know on WDEV, Vermont's news station, locally owned, locally managed, a real gem for Vermont, and so may it always be. Well, let's go back now to Bill. And Bill, you had some time to think about a big challenge you're up against in the year ahead, or maybe the few years ahead. And I've got a couple ideas too, so let's start with you.
Well, I guess one of the big challenges is we're losing farms as we go forward. And Vermont is down to 570 farms left operating, dairy farms, I'm talking, in the state of Vermont. And when you lose enough of those farms, you start to look around and say, wait a minute, if we lose all of these farms, what's going to happen to us? So that's the question that we need to evaluate. What's going to happen to us is one of the first things that will happen is we're going to lose our infrastructure.
Yes.
Like Champlain Valley equipment, for example. If you're not a farmer, you say, well, I'm not a farmer. How will it affect me? Do you realize that with the $2.2 billion a year that dairy brings to Vermont, that there are a lot of things that are going to change? And we won't have control over that. So when it comes down to market function, you say, how can something like that have an impact on us? I'm not even a farmer. Well, you know, the nature of market function is either to expand or contract. And it doesn't matter if it's grain markets, milk markets, cheese markets, what. But, you know, national dairy policy addresses increased demand, but they don't offer any method other than survival of the fittest to prevent a prolonged downturn of market oversupply. And policy change there has been strongly opposed by those interests that profit from depressed milk pricing. But as farms continue to disappear nationwide, we find America's rural community in a state of disrepair rather than being the asset we historically recall. So as you start to look at market function and then you look at export markets and recognize that that's what provides some balance that keeps the dollar value of the products that we're producing up there, then and what influences the export markets? I'll give you an idea. China has recently announced that their population declined last year. I think it was last year or the year before. They lost people. And that's the first time in 60 years that their population has declined. Today, we're looking at China as an export market. Last year, they bought a lot of product from the United States. This year, they've bought some cows from Australia and some from New Zealand, 1.2 million cows. And they're trying to rapidly increase their milk production so that they can better feed themselves. That will all have an impact on us.
A few years ago, Bill, it seems like there was a drought in Australia or New Zealand, and that was very helpful to our farmers in Vermont. Have I got that right?
That's correct. It was last year, actually. Mm-hmm. And it was also last year in the European Union. There was a drought, but things are coming around and the production is moving forward. And China has decided that they're going to increase their milk production. So we'll see how that sugars off. But I can tell you that if there isn't money in dairy in the state of Vermont, it has an impact on the infrastructure. And, you know, you got to look at it like this, too. That's 6,000 jobs or more directly related to dairy that are going to be impacted to some extent, and it throws everything off. So we're trying to do something with federal policy so that maybe it works a little more static, so to speak, a little more even. There's too much fluctuation in the marketplace, and it's difficult to operate. One day, for example, grain is one price, and then a report comes out, and grain is a substantially higher price, but the product you're producing hasn't changed in price. If anything, it may have dropped. So those are difficult things to face.
And they're all part of the market system, and if anybody can handle those challenges, it's our Vermont farmers. Bill, I'd like you to say a few words about how nations increase how the demand for milk and milk products increases as an impoverished nation increases its per capita income. It seems to me that's what China's going through. There's another possible explanation, and we'll say something about that. But it seems to me as their per capita income was increasing, which it was the last few years, they want to have more milk and milk products. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, the products that we send to those export markets are oftentimes referred to as milk solids, and they're referred to like that because they're generally in either cheese or butter form or powder form. You know, like whole milk powder, skim milk powder, non-fat dry milk, milk protein concentrates, that kind of thing.
All those powders, Bill, are they? It seems like they'd be less expensive to ship them to foreign markets like China. And then what do they do when it arrives? They add water, or is there more to the? I suspect there's a lot more to the process than that.
Well, water is a common thing everywhere, I suppose, and you don't want to spend too much money shipping water around the world. So if you make powder or cheese or butter, you maybe not eliminated the water in a couple of those products, but you've reduced it substantially. But the other thing is don't forget, milk has a shelf life, and you're not going to ship milk around the world in its fluid form, so you're going to do it in a powder form. That way, you're protecting the integrity of the product, extending its shelf life, and giving people something that they need for their population.
And it seems to me, Bill, that others might raise the question of China wanting to get less dependent on America, and then you mentioned earlier that a lot of milk products is being produced in Europe. How do you figure, how much of a factor is that in their desire to bring in the cows?
Well, now you're getting into the political equation.
Yes.
And that gets pretty dicey at times when you recognize the state of affairs in certain parts of the world today as a result of some of the alliances that that China has. And I know that they depend on us for their export market. So there's supposed to be a balance of trade, which doesn't seem to exist too well between the U.S. and China. But their balance of trade is tipped in their favor. And we do expect some trade from them. And they, I think they work towards doing something about that. But their fears, in my opinion, have to do with having too heavy a reliance on somebody like the United States or somebody other than outside their region or the outside of their country. Mm-hmm. And you know, if, let's say, for example, in the United States, just from weather events that we've seen over the recent years, if we produce everything in one region of the country and that country is wiped, if that region of the country is under duress because of a natural disaster, what about the rest of the people in the country? What are we going to do to feed ourselves? Mm-hmm. So I think China looks at that. That's a huge country with 1.41 billion people. That's 18% of the world population, for Pete's sake. Mm-hmm. How are you going to feed those people? And so they better be paying attention. But we count on that market. That's a big market.
We do. And I suspect the Politburo over in China is paying pretty close attention, too. Their economy is very strong, not quite as strong as America's, but I will say this. We have a lot less debt. Now, it's hard to tell, or they have a lot less debt. It's hard to tell for sure because their statement of debt numbers are not public very often. But I think they have strived to balance their payments more so than we have. And we, in effect, send money overseas that gets to buy something, and then people buy dollars to buy products in the United States, but not really products or services. They're buying our debt, and that's another very complicated issue. But it shows we're an educational mission on this show, and we take up some very complex problems. Many of our listeners are in rural Vermont. Many of them are dairy farmers. And today we're all learning from Bill Rao about the challenges and opportunities that our farmers face. And I will say that it's important for people who live in what in Vermont is an urban area. It might be 40,000 people in Burlington or 120,000 in Chittenden County. It's about as close to urban as we got, but many of them are disconnected from the land. And when they want to reconnect with the land, which I think is a natural impulse, there's a tendency, they have a tendency to want to shut down harvesting, particularly of wood products, but I suspect a little bit, Bill, on the farm products too. When you look at the groups that are sincerely concerned about water quality and other environmental issues, have they got a general position about dairy? Do they want to see less of it? Are they willing to acknowledge that when you're producing renewable energy, that that's good? Complicated topic, but give us your thoughts.
Well, I think they're inclined to protect their interests before they recognize your interests. Mm-hmm. And then after the fact, they may reevaluate it and decide that they maybe have to moderate things a little better. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, you talk about weather events. This past year, we had 9.4 million acres of corn in the United States that didn't get harvested because of weather conditions. In some parts of the country, it was too dry and the corn didn't mature. And in other parts of the country, it was underwater. And so they couldn't harvest it. So that what does that do out of the 92 million acres or whatever? That shorts the supply of grain. And so what happens? The price spikes upward. Yeah. And then you wait to hear what Brazil and Argentina are doing with their crops. Now it's summer down their way just now. And when their crops are being ready for harvest, if they're having a bonus year, it relaxes the pressure some. If they're short on grain because of drought, then the price remains high and it puts it out of reach. So if you can't operate enough above your cost of production to make some money, it doesn't leave a guy a lot of incentive to produce. And that's why we've seen so many farms go out of business, because it's so competitive, and it's really quite a juggling game.
It certainly is, and we will talk about that more next time. But I want to get one last thought, because our time is running short, about how the Global Warming Solutions Act, the restrictions on the use of hydrocarbon fuels as for your machines, for your harvesting, for your tractors, your trucks, and your home, perhaps. I'm concerned about how that will work a hardship on Vermont's farmers if we put it into effect too fast. Give us a closing thought, Bill Rao.
Well, the closing thought is, where do you want your food to come from? You know, you're going to have air pollution anyway. If you don't produce it here, somebody else will produce it for you. If you're not producing the food in this country, where you have some control over what kind of air quality that you expect for the country, that's one thing. But well, if you...
Bill, we'll pick up the... We'll pick up the second point next time. The one thing is enough. That's very serious, and people forget it. So we want to thank Bill Rao for a great job of educating us about the economics of agriculture. I want to thank all of you for listening. As you go through the day, I hope you're kind and patient and tolerant. Keep listening, keep learning, and most of all, keep the faith.